Hello, this is Jan Kane. It is Monday, November 18th, and I'm going to be reading to you today from the News Gazette. Since the News Gazette no longer publishes on Monday, I'll be reading a compilation of stories from both the Saturday and Sunday paper. So we'll start with an article titled, "And They're Off." It will be 2020 when state lawmakers reconvene for business in Springfield. Now that they're back in their home districts for the year, here's a look back at some of the highs and lows of a six-day veto session that brought good news for overworked pharmacists, no more 12-hour shifts, and not so good news for rules-breaking politicians. An ethics commission is on the way. Winners. Number one, diners worried about the couple at the next table lighting up a joint for dessert. Upon further review, the recreational marijuana bill was rewritten to prohibit pot at public places where food and/or drinks are sold. Number two, drivers with stacks of unpaid parking tickets. No longer can 10 of them, or 5 toll violations, lead to your license getting suspended, thanks to a bill championed by local Democrat Carol Ammons. Number three in the winner's column, college ADs. So much for fears that legislators would pass a bill allowing athletes to be paid for the use of their name or likeness before the NCAA got around to it. This issue isn't dead, though. Expect round two to come early next year. And in the losers column, number one, the "It's too dark out at 5 p.m. crowd. A push to make daylight savings time permanent garnered support in the Senate, but did not catch on in the House. Number two, red light runners. Those controversial cameras, typically installed in metal boxes attached to poles at intersections, are here to stay, at least for now, after never coming up for a floor vote in the Senate. And number three in the losers column, greedy insurance companies. Governor J.B. Pritzker says he'll happily sign the measure that caps at $100 the price diabetics in state-regulated commercial insurance plans pay out of pocket for a 30-day supply. Next up is an article from Tom Kasich in Countdown to 2020. The headline is, "Dem Donors Still Feeling the Burn in CU Area." Less than a year out from Election Day, the favorite local presidential candidate, based on campaign donations, remains Democratic Senator Bernie Sanders. Of the more than $60,000 that has been contributed from Champaign, Urbana, and Danville this year to 14 presidential candidates, Sanders has close to a third of all the money. The Vermont senator has received $18,578 from donors in the three cities, led by more than $9,000 from 24 Urbana residents. He has also received $8,817 from 22 contributors in Champaign. Second place now belongs to 37-year-old South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, with $11,886. He narrowly passed Senator Elizabeth Warren, who had been number two after the last round of fundraising reports in July. Warren reported $11,328 from donors in the three cities. Each of the three reported about $10,000 in contributions from Champaign, Urbana, Danville residents within the July-September period as presidential candidate fundraising escalated. After that, it's a steep drop-off to the other contenders. President Donald Trump reported $5,916 in contributions. Another $1,237 went to a separate pro-Trump group entitled the Committee to Defend the President. Former Vice President Joe Biden reported $3,838 in contributions, followed by Andrew Yang at $1,755, Senator Kamala Harris at $1,180, author Marianne Williamson, $975, Senator Amy Klobuchar, $930, Julian Castro, $889, and Senator Cory Booker, $850. Minor amounts went to Representative Tulsi Gabbard and former candidates Beto O'Rourke and Jay Inslee. That Sanders is in the lead and Trump is in fourth place follows 2016 voting preferences, particularly in Champaign-Urbana. In that year's Democratic primary, Sanders won Champaign County with more than 66% of the vote. In Vermilion County, he finished second to Hillary Clinton, 51.2% to 47.1%. In the general election, Clinton defeated Trump in Champaign County, 54.7% to 36.4%. It was a different story, however, in Vermilion County, where Trump prevailed with 62%. Trump has raised $1,700 in Vermilion County this year. Sanders is second there with $676. Another area where Trump has done exceedingly well, he got 78% of the vote in 2016, is Effingham County, about 70 miles south of Champaign-Urbana and in the heart of the most conservative region of Illinois. Trump has raised $1,472 there this year to $500 for Yang, $334 for Buttigieg, $200 for Klobuchar, and $162 for Sanders. Back in July, the Washington Post did a story on how Democrats in the U.S. House had taken an early lead on 2020 campaign fundraising. Post reporters noted that in Illinois' 13th congressional district, Democrat Betsy Londrigan of Springfield outraised incumbent Representative Rodney Davis, Republican of Taylorville, in the second quarter of 2019 by about $100,000. However, in the third quarter, which ended September 30th, Davis outraised Londrigan by almost $170,000. Davis advanced the notion in the Post story that Londrigan got a lot of her campaign money from outside of central Illinois, from people whose values aren't in sync with his congressional district. You've got to hand it to the Dems and give them some credit for being able to get out and get donors from throughout the nation to support candidates. But when you have cities like New York and San Francisco and Los Angeles supporting candidates in central Illinois, their values may not be the values of the constituents that I serve, Davis said. Ironically, the website opensecrets.org reports that Davis has received more money from outside the 13th District, $203,346, than Londrigan, who's received $142,647. Nearly 59% of his contributions from individuals were from outside the district, compared with 33% of Londrigan's. Open Secrets also noted that a lot of Londrigan's money, $236,321, could not be tied to a street address. Only $48,964 of Davis's contributions had that issue. Londrigan's top five metro areas for contributions were Chicago, Springfield, St. Louis, Champaign-Urbana, and Washington, D.C. Davis's were Chicago, Springfield, Washington, D.C., Decatur, and Champaign-Urbana. A group called Defend American Democracy is spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on television commercials in central Illinois, urging Davis to hold President Trump accountable for risking our national security and abusing his office to benefit himself. Defend American Democracy said it is targeting 15 Republican congressmen around the country and urging them to put country over politics. The group said it is part of the Protect the Investigation organization, which describes itself as a nonpartisan initiative to educate the American people about the importance of the inquiry into foreign interference in our democracy. Defend American Democracy began running TV spots in the Champaign-Decatur-Springfield market earlier this month, and apparently will continue for at least another week. According to documents available at the Federal Communications Commission website, the group will have spent more than $200,000 on broadcast and cable TV spots by the end of November 20th. It has booked more than $24,000 on cable TV spots for November 14th to the 20th, and more than $120,000 for spots on WAND, WCIA, WRSP, and WICS in the same period. At WAND, for example, it is spending $35,760 for 51 commercials this week. The ads aren't influencing Davis. He's stated repeatedly in recent weeks that he opposes impeachment, supports President Trump, and wants Congress to focus on issues such as infrastructure, health care, and student debt. Now we'll turn to an article entitled, "That's the Spirit." Champaign Central Senior Not Alone in Her Fight. Next, we have a story entitled, "That's the Spirit." Champaign Central Senior Not Alone in Her Fight Against Cancer. The byline is Colin Likas. Liara Aber was diagnosed with Bell's palsy as a high school freshman. The Champaign Central swimmer took this medical news in stride. She still doesn't have full movement on one side of her face, but her status has improved. I was like, this is going to be the one big thing life is going to throw at me, Aber said. Sadly, there was more. In May 2019, Aber learned she would have to battle cancer too, Hodgkin's lymphoma. I was checking in over the summer, beginning of June, and she had told me, Maroons coach Katie Van Hootegem said. First, it was just kind of shock. The second concern for Van Hootegem, ensuring Aber could swim during her final prep season if the athlete both desired and was physically able to. I wanted to do it because it was my senior year, but I also wanted to do it because I wanted to spend the last time I could with my team, Aber said. I wanted to finish out my Central career as a swimmer. Aber is slated to compete in today's Urbana Sectional in the 50 and 100-yard freestyle. It's a dramatic turnaround for Aber, who participated in little more than a month of training not affected by chemotherapy. As a junior, Aber boasted the area's sixth-best 100 breaststroke time, 1 minute 13 seconds, 13.55 seconds, and the 10th-best 200 individual medley, clocking 2 minutes 29 seconds. Instead of spending the summer and early fall preparing to put a dent in those results, Aber found herself traveling to Chicago for cancer treatment. It sucks I didn't have a summer, but I still worked, Aber said. I was a coach at Sholem Aquatic Center over the summer. I still did my internship with Promise Healthcare when I could. And Aber also remained in the pool. I would start to get really nauseous and my head would be super dizzy, and so I just stopped before I would pass out, Aber said. I didn't finish practice most of the time in the first part of the season. With that reality came a decrease in Aber's morale. She went into her cancer fight believing things would get easier as time went on. Instead, she found more difficulty as illness seeped into every part of her life. She would get so upset because she wanted to be there. She wanted to be part of the team, Van Hootegem said. There were a couple mornings where she was like, Coach Katie, I just don't feel well. As Aber's chemotherapy wore on, her times continued to drive further away from their junior year bests. It's really hard to swim whenever you know you're never going to get to where you used to be, Aber said. Aber also had to deal with wandering eyes from passersby who'd stare at Aber's bald head, another side effect of chemotherapy. Luckily for Aber, she had a countermeasure in place, fellow Central senior Alexia Popa. Anytime people look at me funny, she would just stare them down, Aber said with a laugh. It's little things like that. That's why I kept swimming. Aber concluded her treatment in September, though she experienced a two-week setback because of a blood clot in one lung. Ultimately, Aber now is in remission from the Hodgkin's lymphoma. As her health improved, so did her times in the water. The biggest yes moment was a week ago, Van Hootegem said. We do this set during taper where it's off the blocks. We go all out. You go as fast as you can. And she swam a season personal record. For her to smile for the first time in a very long time after seeing a time she went was great. Aber and the Maroons hosted their first meet in a renovated Unit 4 pool on October 12th. Prior to any swimming, Central held a senior ceremony for Aber, Popa, and Julia Wilson. I was trying not to cry, Van Hootegem said. I had all the girls submit things to me they want to say about each senior, and almost every person said, you will never meet someone as kind as Liara, and you will never meet someone who works as hard as Liara. Said Aber, my team and my coaches were always people that I could fall back on. It was really important to me to have not just my parents to talk to about what I was going through, but I also had a team. In early December, Aber has the first of what will become lifelong cancer scans. It's a consistent reminder of what Aber went through, and hopefully never will have to again. It's also a reminder of what sort of impact Aber's style of fighting has made on those closest to her. The fact that she can come in here every day and give it her all to the point where she's puking or dizzy or crying because she just hurts so bad, Van Hootegem said, that's inspirational. So how is Aber approaching her ongoing remission? I read something online, and it said, one-third of Americans are diagnosed with cancer sometime in their lifetime, Aber said. I would just joke and be like, I'm just getting done with mine early. Now we'll turn to an article from Mary Schenck entitled, Champagne Couple Facing Charges. Officers needed 3 hours to remove 84 dogs. Champaign County's top prosecutor has filed criminal charges against a Champaign couple accused of mistreating scores of dogs by hoarding them. State's attorney Julia Reitz on Friday filed misdemeanor charges of failure to provide humane care and treatment of animals against Mark Richards, age 61, and Wendy Richards, age 55, who live in the 1300 block of West Springfield Avenue. On October 22nd, Champaign County animal control officers, armed with a search warrant, seized 69 adult dogs and 15 puppies that were flea-infested and had their coats matted with feces from the couple's one-story, approximately 1,900-square-foot home. We are treating this as an animal hoarding situation. We are concerned about the health and welfare of the dogs, as well as the health and welfare of the people, Reitz said. Although the maximum penalty for the misdemeanor offense is up to 6 months in the county jail if they are convicted, the Richards can be court-ordered to be psychologically evaluated and get treatment if recommended, Reitz explained. The discovery of the 84 dogs began on October 16th when an employee of the Urbana-Champaign Sanitary District, who was working near the home, heard what sounded like a significant number of dogs and noticed a horrible smell when he approached, Reitz said. He contacted the county's animal control office. Champaign has a contract with the county to provide services within the city, and an officer went there the following day. The animal control officer spoke to the residents on October 17th and could hear a large number of dogs, Reitz said. However, the couple refused to let her in to investigate, so she took steps with the help of the city's legal department to obtain a search warrant, which they served October 22nd. The residence was full of feces and urine throughout. Some of the dogs were aggressive and bit the animal control officers, Reitz said. They had fleas, significant matting of their coats, three were pregnant. Many had not been vaccinated, she added. Reitz said it took the two officers 3 hours to get the 84 dogs removed from the home. They were taken to the animal control pound on East Washington Street in Urbana. They thought they had them all, but on November 1st, representatives of the city's Neighborhood Services Department went back with an administrative search warrant to see if the house was habitable. Reitz said Lieutenant Bruce Ramseyer accompanied those folks, and on that day they found one more dog in poor health, a cat that could not be caught, and two dead kittens in the basement. The ailing dog was taken at that time. Ramseyer reported that the couple was making efforts to clean up the house, and there were shovels in plain sight being used to remove the animal feces. Reitz said on November 6th, the couple surrendered their rights to approximately 80 of the dogs. Many of them have been sent to a partner organization for adoption, and they're working on foster placements for the healthy ones, she said. The Animal Control Department is continuing to provide care for those too sick to be fostered. The Richards are expected to appear in court on December 6th. Next, we'll turn to an article from Ben Zeiderman titled, Officers Cleared by Judge, City Thankful After Dismissal of Lawsuit. A federal judge dismissed an excessive force lawsuit filed by the sister of a well-known homeless man who died in 2016 after a struggle with Champaign police. U.S. Magistrate Judge Eric I. Long called the officer's actions reasonable when they called for an ambulance, held him on the ground, and handcuffed Richard Richie Turner, who died at age 54 on November 16, 2016. The officers were attempting to get Turner to the hospital for an involuntary mental health commitment, Long wrote in his decision Friday. When officers arrived, Turner was making sporadic movements, was incoherent, and was unable or unwilling to respond to the officers' questions. The officers familiar with Turner noted that he was acting worse than normal. Given this, and that he was wandering in the middle of the street in a highly trafficked area on the University of Illinois campus on a weekday morning, Long wrote that no reasonable jury could conclude that the officers were unreasonable in their decision to use limited force to restrain Turner. An attorney for Chandra Turner, the older sister of Mr. Turner, who filed the lawsuit, said his law firm is reviewing the dismissal. We received the court's decision Friday and, of course, respect it. We are reviewing the opinion to determine our next steps, which, of course, include the possibility of an appeal, Victor P. Henderson said. The facts are undisputed that Richie was alive and enjoying his life before he encountered multiple police officers, and then he was dead just moments afterwards. It is in that context that the family will decide how to proceed. Raised in Champaign, Mr. Turner was a talented football player at Central High School and was remembered by friends as a kind-hearted man, despite his mental issues and limited means. Fred Stavens, the city attorney for Champaign, expressed sympathy to Mr. Turner's family, but said the city was thankful for the dismissal. We as a city express our sympathy to Mr. Turner's family for the loss of Richard Turner, he said. We are thankful that the district court found in favor of the city and its officers. We believe that the city's police officers acted with consummate professionalism in this matter. The lawsuit had named the city of Champaign, as well as Sergeant Tom Frost and officers Michael Talbot, Andrew Wilson, and Chris Young. In his order dismissing the case, Long detailed the events leading up to Mr. Turner's death, based on video of the encounter and depositions of the officers, paramedics, physicians, and members of the coroner's office. A woman called police around 8 a.m. asking for someone to check on Mr. Turner as he was holding a partly empty bottle of wine, hollering at people, and pulling the sleeve out of a trash can, Long wrote. Officers arrived shortly before 9 a.m. to the 600 block of South 6th Street and found Mr. Turner to be acting abnormally. When they approached him to ask him some questions, Wilson radioed for an ambulance. Young and Wilson asked Mr. Turner to sit on the curb, but he instead ran away, Long wrote. They found him in an alley nearby, and video from Frost's car shows officers struggling to restrain Turner, Long wrote. When Wilson put his hand on Mr. Turner's shoulder, Mr. Turner pulled away and shoved Wilson, the judge wrote. Young then grabbed Mr. Turner's left side, and Mr. Turner then tried to grab him back. Mr. Turner was pulled to the ground while Mr. Turner continued to kick and grab at the officers, Long wrote. Plaintiff disputes that Turner's actions were intentional or aggressive. Instead, plaintiff argues that Turner's actions were a result of his mental illness. Mr. Turner was schizophrenic. The officers handcuffed Mr. Turner and used a hobble to tie his legs together. At 9:07 a.m., Frost asks, "Is he still breathing?" "I'm not feeling any breath," Wilson said. They then retrieved a defibrillator. At 9:08 a.m., the defibrillator pads were applied, but the device signaled it wasn't needed and instructed officers to begin CPR. At 9:09 a.m., the ambulance arrived and paramedics took over. Mr. Turner was taken to the hospital, where he was pronounced dead at 9:42 a.m. While, sadly, Mr. Turner died during his interactions with police, Long wrote, that death on its own is insufficient to show that the officers were responsible. No reasonable jury could find that the officers used excessive force, Long concluded. There is no evidence the officers used force greater than necessary to restrain Turner. The officers seized Turner in a firm manner to encourage cooperation. The autopsy also found that while the officers' restraint could be a contributing factor to Mr. Turner's death, it concluded that was not the cause. Instead, it found that Mr. Turner had an enlarged heart and died of a heart attack, Long said. Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz also determined that there was no evidence to support criminal charges against anyone in relation to Mr. Turner's death. It's unclear why Mr. Turner was acting abnormally that morning. Despite the report that he was drinking, the toxicology report did not report positive findings for alcohol or any drugs beyond caffeine and nicotine, according to Long. We'll turn to a few area updates. First, Housing Authority of Champaign County eviction freeze in place for the winter. The Housing Authority of Champaign County is temporarily freezing eviction actions for the cold weather months, effective immediately. The moratorium will be effective through March 1, 2020, on enforcements of all nonviolent and non-criminal activity-related evictions from properties owned or managed by the Housing Authority. The eviction freeze is intended to prevent more homelessness during the winter. Pending court cases will be dismissed or postponed, and scheduled evictions will be canceled, according to the Housing Authority. The Housing Authority said it also won't process any terminations of tenants in its Housing Choice Voucher Program. During the eviction freeze, the Housing Authority said it plans to work with residents and nonprofit organizations to bring tenant accounts current, though rent owed to the Housing Authority during the eviction freeze period will continue to accrue. Many individuals living in our properties are elderly and/or disabled, and those who are on our voucher program are exceedingly below the area median income, said Housing Authority CEO David Northern Sr. We serve an at-risk population and find winter evictions to be especially cruel and dangerous because of the public health hazards posed by cold weather homelessness. The Housing Authority said it can't prevent eviction actions filed by landlords for the Housing Choice Voucher Program, but participants being evicted will be allowed to use their voucher assistance to search for other housing during the grace period. The fundraising bells are back in action. Salvation Army volunteers started ringing those familiar bells Friday, kicking off the 128-year-old fundraiser that provides nearly a quarter of the organization's support. The Red Kettle Campaign, which has been part of the Christmas season since 1891, continues 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. daily through December 24th. Bell ringers will be stationed by Red Kettles at 29 retail locations, and another 57 countertop mini kettles will be placed throughout Champaign County. The goal this season is to raise $195,000. The campaign will get a boost at a Good Works Day promotion at the November 30th Illinois Northwestern game, where Illini athletes and Salvation Army leaders and volunteers will ring bells near gates on the east and west sides of a Memorial Stadium before the game. Donors this year will also be able to use Apple Pay, Google Pay, or Samsung Pay to donate. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated today is Monday, November 18th, but remember we're reading from the Saturday and Sunday issues. Please stay tuned.